I hear that, and I think of losing to Ewoks. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 498.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host,
John Ringer.
John, we pulled the great escape again. We keep on playing to the level of our competition and relying on the kindness of strangers in black and white striped shirts.
I was going to say, you said the great escape again, and I was going to say, no prison camp can hold us.
Nah, that's right.
Well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here.
Well, not if it's Arkansas, and not if it's Ole Miss, apparently you don't, because, we somehow we keep finding a way to perhaps legitimately, perhaps illegitimately come out on top. Yeah, oh, it's a win. I spent the last 48 hours occasionally on Twitter calmly and rationally explaining to people that when the referee blows the whistle, the play is over, and so reviews don't do anything. I mean, how many times have I wished we could go back to 1986 and the referee not blow the whistle on Brent Fulwood before he scores the potential game-winning touchdown against Georgia?
Yep.
But you know what? Reviews wouldn't have helped because they blew the whistle. So doesn't really matter, and we can talk about that play. I guess we can get to it in a minute, but there's more to it. And I went back and watched it multiple times over and over. On somebody had a clip they posted of it, and it's a little more intricate than it first seems. It's more intricate than I remembered it, but it's still the explanation holds up. So, what were your immediate thoughts after getting through that the Ole Miss game?
My immediate thoughts were there would be no, again, there's no cupcake games. There's no every game is going to be a 4-hour knuckle gripping pacing, stress inducing roller coaster.
That's true. I was pretty sanguine about it most of the way through. I would watch a play and then read some of the book I was reading, and then watch a play and then read some of the book in between plays, and I just wasn't really that fired up about it. I figured, If we win big, then that's good. We beat Ole Miss and we beat them well. But I didn't think we would because they can score too much. So then I thought, well, so we're going to beat Ole Miss in a close game. Well, that's good, but beating Ole Miss in a really close game makes you wonder, well, then how are you going to do against the big teams coming up? So that's kind of worrisome. And then every other option was we lose, which I didn't want to think about. So there really just wasn't a prime outcome for this game. If it was a blowout win for us, that's good, but it's not very entertaining or exciting. It's entertaining in a way, but this was just a game that was destined never to be great. There were no formula under which this would be a great game. It just wasn't.
Well, I mean, if you like offense, it was going to be a game with offense because of the way Ole Miss plays.
But it was 14-14 at the half.
Yeah, but there was a lot of mowing up and down the field to get to 14-14.
Yeah, which is another type of disappointment.
Well, but again, I would strongly disagree with your take about beating. So Alabama's not any good because they beat this team close, and they allowed way more yards than we did.
They sure did. That's the truth.
So did Florida.
Yep.
So,
Well, you know what we did? We played them like we played LSU last year. it looked exactly to me, to my untrained eye, and correct me if I'm wrong, but to my untrained eye, from the very first snap of Ole Miss having the ball, first play of the game, I'm like, oh, I see. We're just going to play them like we played LSU. And it worked pretty well.
It wasn't exactly the same, but it was the same idea.
Yeah, we rushed three, dropped eight back, and let them run and shut down the passing lanes.
And we played an extra linebacker instead of a defensive back. Yeah. But because it's McLean and Papo and they could both cover, it doesn't matter as much.
Right, right.
And
we're down linebackers anyway. We're playing a safety instead of a linebacker, putting an extra linebacker in and just getting back halfway to normal.
Yeah. So it's not the same without Derek Brown doing that formation, but the goal is the same, to encourage them to run the ball.
Yeah.
That just like LSU, this Ole Miss team could tear you up throwing the ball down the field. They tore Alabama into little pieces throwing the ball 20 yards down the field.
They did.
And Auburn only allowed that one long pass play, and that was on a blown coverage. So the defense absolutely did a great job in that respect. And people were fussing about it, but
– Didn't the running game that they pulled out kind of worry you, though? I was getting a little nervous.
No. This is the whole thing. It goes back to what we talked about last week. We are in an era of great offense.
Yeah.
Great offense basically cannot be stopped, and they have a great offense. Like they do. Their offense is one of the best in the entire country. It's well designed. They have their skill position guys are all really, really good, and they made plays. And Kiffin was smart about it. As soon as we started doing the drop everybody back thing, he brought in the running quarterback and ran the ball at us. So, but to me, the thing that was really smart about Auburn's strategy was, we combined that defense with us running the ball more, and then we get into a game with fewer possessions. And it's like we always talk about in these kind of games, it's just about breaking serve on the other guy. We broke serve on them a couple times, and then we limited the normal possessions. They would normally want there to be like, you know, five more possessions in the game if they had their way, and we didn't let it get to that.
You know, it seemed, though, at early in the game, it seemed like they were slowing the game down a little bit. They kind of were putting their foot on the brake to keep us off the field. When we were kind of moving the ball on them real well, they got out there. And you know they do that hurry up, but when they get to the line, there was a couple of series where they would run up to the line and they would just stand there and let the clock run down about 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm. But it's a stress on the defense to, you know, the things they do like that. So
we couldn't substitute. But
yes.
But I mean, but they still, they weren't, in other words, they weren't trying for a while to just kind of play. They were like, hurry up, and then sit and wait. Now, they to their credit, they didn't do the prairie dog thing that drives us nuts. they knew what they were going to do. They didn't have to check with anybody. They just got up to the line and just kind of had a ham sandwich, you know, and chips, and then ran the play.
Because a lot of what they're going to do is determined by what you do. Like, if you put more guys on this side, they're going the other way. You know what I'm saying? So they were waiting to see right before they snapped the ball what Auburn's final alignment was, and then that, in some, a lot of ways, determined which direction they were going.
What would you think if our offensive team was running their offense with their offensive coaches? Would it be better than it is now, worse than it is now, different, the same, what?
You mean our offensive players running their scheme?
Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, you're talking about what great players they have, and I'm like, shouldn't we have better players than Ole Miss?
Yeah, but again, Ole Miss has produced a lot of good players over the last 10 years. And they don't have a lot of good players on defense right now, but their skill position guys on offense are pretty good. Their receivers and running backs are all highly recruited guys. So,
I'm just wondering how our guys would do in a system like that. Would they do better than they are now, or worse, or what?
I think it'd be really good. I think we do a bunch of damage in that system. I really do. But it would sacrifice the defense.
Yeah.
That's kind of what they're doing to their defense. Yeah. They're throwing them under the bus.
I think they feel like their defense is already flat, so getting run over by a bus is not a step down at this point.
No.
When you're already weekend at Bernie's, getting tossed under a bus is just one more indignity that just doesn't really make that much difference, to be honest.
All right, so let's go, before we get into the rest, let's go to the last play. Like, what do you think? What happened?
All right.
Not the last play, the Shivers kickoff.
The kickoff. All right. So I'm not even going to go into what I thought originally because it doesn't even matter anymore. I'm going to tell you what I saw when I went back and rewatched just that clip on a loop like five times all the way through. Here is what happened. And the eye fools you. You know, you think you know what you saw, but I watched it over and over until I knew. What happened was Ole Miss kicks off the ball. It comes down, hits the ground, hits Shivers' finger. I don't think that there's any doubt that it hit his finger. Okay. It goes under his hand and into the end and towards the end zone. As it's going past him into the end zone, he takes a couple of steps back and looks directly at the end zone referee. The ball then scoots into the end zone with Shivers still the closest player to it, but he is no longer running towards it. He has stopped and is standing there looking at the referee as if to say, huh, huh? And the referee, I think, reacts to Shivers being 100% not going out. In other words, if Shivers had turned around and run after the ball, knowing that he touched it, I don't think the referee would have blown the whistle. Mm-hmm. I think 100% the referee blew the whistle because Shivers just calmly turned around and looked at him without running as if there was nothing to worry about, nothing going on. The referee in his brain, you got like a split second to react, right? You got like a split second if you're that referee. That referee has to think, in that split second, I think that referee thought, if the ball had touched this player would be running after the ball. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, he would have been panicking.
He'd been panicking, right. I think that Shivers deserves a freaking Oscar because he looked at the referee as if to say, well, are you going to blow the whistle since it clearly did not touch me? And the referee responded, why, yes, sir, I will. Tweet! And then Shivers chills, walks right off the field like nothing's going on. The Ole Miss player comes and jumps on the ball. And then the referee is kind of like, huh, I wonder why he did that since it clearly didn't touch anybody. So I honestly, that's kind of the way that it played out. And I honestly think if you watch it, if you watch the visual interaction between Shivers and the referee, I think 100% Shivers sold it to the referee because he had to know it hit him, right?
He felt Jedi it. Mind tricked him.
He said, Shivers looked at the referee, did the little finger thing and said, that ball didn't touch my hand. And the referee said, the ball didn't touch his hand. It's a touchback. It's a touchback. You should blow the whistle. Tweet! I'm blowing the whistle. Tweet!
Nice.
Move along. To which the Ole Miss fans look at the referee and say,
you have failed me for the last time.
To which I say, yeah, they said that at Arkansas too, and it didn't matter, and it wasn't true.
I don't know if you saw the news tonight, but Lane Kiffin got fined $25,000 for criticizing the officiating after the game.
Oh, there's news. Honest to God, when you said Lane Kiffin got fired, I was about to swallow my drink backwards and throw and choke to death. No. But yeah, your little quote was,
it's a trap.
Yeah, it was a trap. But I think that that's, the more I think about it and the more I've watched it, the more I'm just absolutely sure that Shivers, honestly, I mean, I don't even know if he did it consciously. There wasn't time to think anything through there. It all was like bang, 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 you know? I think that the ball went by, Shivers felt it touch his finger, and I don't think he thought that that mattered. And so I think he looked at the referee as if to say, it doesn't matter if it touched me or not, because it's a dead ball. And I've seen some differing of opinions on this. Do you have a definitive opinion on this? I've read one rule that says if a ball on a kickoff touches a receiving player and then goes into the end zone and a kicking player recovers it, it is a touchdown for the kicking player. But then I've also been told that that's only in the NFL, and in college, regardless of how the ball gets into the end zone, when the ball touches the ground in the end zone, it is a touchback regardless of whether it touched anybody or not. So it's hard for me to know which one of those is true.
I actually downloaded the NCAA football.
Here we go.
Before this, because I thought this question was going to come up, and yep, it's available in PDF format if you're really having a hard time sleeping one night, and you want to get a look at it. Rule 6 involves kicks, and this includes punts, and you know, free kicks, which is a kickoff in the rule book, a free kick.
Yeah.
And a
free kick is a lot. A kickoff is a lot. I always say, I've always tried to explain this to my wife and kids and everything. A kickoff is basically a fumble that goes a long way until it gets to the end zone, right? Because it's a live ball. It's not like a punt. You can't onside punt, but you can onside kick. You know what I mean? So a kickoff is basically like a fumble.
No, it's a live ball.
Yeah, it's like you kick it and it's a fumble and everybody goes and tries to get on it. Yeah. But and it goes in the end zone, does that change or not if it touches somebody?
The honest answer is I read all this and I don't know.
Well, somebody on Twitter quoted me two sections that supposedly sum the whole thing up, but I did not do like you and download the actual rule book to find out because I really didn't care because it didn't matter because he blew the freaking whistle, which rendered everything else immaterial. Now, we can complain that he shouldn't have blown the whistle. That's a whole other controversy. But the fact is that he did. And so, to quote Animal House, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Okay?
Well, no, and you're 100% right. It's this is the thing that'll drive people bonkers. It's actually the same scenario as the Arkansas play.
Yes.
Because as soon as the whistle is blown, everything after that is, you know,
it's moot.
It's fiction.
Yes.
You're writing what you think would have happened.
Right. Yes.
And that's not actually how things work.
It's bad Ole Miss fan fiction, and we don't want to read that any more than we want to read that rule book.
Yes.
I read some Ole Miss fan fiction once. It involved them going to a bowl game that year. They went 7-4. It was really far out.
Please clap.
So, when the free kick... Okay, here we go. I found it. This is the...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. This is in Rule 6 Kicks, and it's Article 7, Ball Dead and End Zone. When a free kick untouched by Team B touches the ground on or behind Team B's goal line, the ball becomes dead and belongs to Team B.
But it was touched.
Yes. So I don't think that rule matters.
So you're saying they don't even say?
No player on the kicking team can touch the ball until it is touched a Team B player, right?
Wait. Until
it's touched the receiving team, okay?
No, it's an onside kick. You can jump on it. The kicking team can jump on it whenever they want to until it gets to the end zone.
It has to go 10 yards.
Has to go 10 yards, yes. Yeah, after 10 yards, it's a live ball for everybody until it gets to the end zone,
until it's going 10 yards.
Yeah, but if somebody on the receiving team touches it, this is where the controversy comes in, because I'm told that there are two places in the NCAA rule book that say that in college it doesn't matter if somebody touched it. It's a touchback if it gets to the end zone regardless.
See, I don't see that. I see if we touched it, it's a live ball.
Oh, God.
Well, but again, it doesn't matter because we're back to the speculative fiction piece.
Right. The whistle.
And waved his hand, so the players are supposed to stop then. And Shivers was the closest player to the ball, and he stopped. He could have gone and dove on the ball. And in hindsight, he really probably should have, right? Because it would have been a touchback either way.
Yeah, to be safe. Yeah, to be safe, he should have. But I do think that the fact that he didn't is what saved our rear ends, because if he had run back there and jumped and he missed it, the best thing Shivers could have done would just be to push it out the back of the end zone. Okay, here it is. WIGGIBR on Twitter says, in the NFL, it would have been a touchdown. In the NCAA, a ball touching the ground in the end zone is a touchback. Kicking team can't recover a muff kick for a touchdown. See Rule 2-11-2 and 8-6-1B from the rule book. So
I don't think he's updated a rule book, but I'm going to look.
2-11-2. This is great radio, by the way. We're indexing. Ooh. Join us for a very special episode of the AU Wishbone, where Van and John search for things in the index of the NCAA rule book. It's a thrill-a-minute fun fest. Yeah, I remember one time I dusted off the clay tablets of the NCAA rulebook to look up what President Lincoln's offense was going to do for us. Yeah, it was a great day. There at Shiloh. There's only so much I can do. What have you found? Have you found 2-11-2?
Yeah, it says to muff the ball is to touch the ball in an unsuccessful attempt to catch or recover it. Muffing the ball does not change its status.
Ah, it does on a punt. It certainly does on a punt. But yeah, not on a kickoff. Because like if it's an onside kick and you kick it off of the other player, there's no difference between jumping on it then and jumping on it if it never touched anybody after it went 10 yards, right? So
yes,
this is a live ball. Again, a kickoff is like a fumble. It's a live freaking ball that anybody can jump on after 10 yards.
So we spent enough time. I'm not going to say this more. But
I think probably so, yes. But I appreciate Wiggerber sending us those rules. So if anybody wants to just really geek out on it, we saw 2-11-2 basically says there's no such thing as a muff or it doesn't change anything. Rule 8-6-1.B, whatever that says. And then there's rule 1-0, which says if the whistle blows, the play is over. I'm pretty sure that's the first rule in the freaking rule book. That's superseding good. All other rules. You can't take back a whistle. We know, right? Ask freaking Pat Nix from LSU. That wasn't even a real whistle. Oh, good God. All right.
So let's talk about the game.
Yeah, some actual specifics here besides that play, for God's sake.
The big thing in this game, I thought, was Bo Nix played his best road game by a mile.
Yeah.
He was really good, really effective.
Yep.
Calm. Took advantage of running, you know, with holding the ball.
Did you hear what Cole Kublik said about that? I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. You repeat it. Go for it, in case I missed it.
He basically said, I don't know if he knows this or thought it or Kevin or not Kevin
Morris,
Steele. Chad Morris. God, for some reason. Morris told him, but he said that it was basically that, you know, up until now, Bo's been doing these things as like bad habits. And so Chad Morris just said, if you're going to do these things anyway, let's just put that in the offense and plan for it and use it in a good way. So he likes to roll out even when he doesn't have to. So we'll just make some plays where he rolls out. And it worked pretty well. He was able to run for quite a lot of yardage, though thankfully he wasn't the leading rusher like in the first week. And he wasn't just madly scrambling. It was like designed, you know?
100% designed. And we did this thing a lot in the game where they would put, you know, four receivers on the right-hand side of the formation. Ole Miss would shift everybody over there, mm-hmm. and then we would run the other way.
Kentucky did that against us, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And so we turned around and did it to Ole Miss, and it was really good. And the other thing that made it even more effective is when we did it kind of off the zone read where we would have Shivers or Tank go up the middle and Bo would be looking at the edge and then fake the handoff to them and then run out to the left edge because then the defense is all clapping to the middle too.
They did that to us a couple of times too. There was a lot of both offenses in that game, I thought, used a lot of inside-outside designs. Yeah. More than I've ever seen two teams do at each other. It's like they were doing it each other back and forth. I thought it was really interesting. You know, a lot of plays where all the action goes to the middle and the quarterback goes outside with it. Nick Marshall would have had a 300-yard game yesterday or Saturday.
He'd have carved them up.
Good Lord. The 2013 team would have run for 500 yards in that game. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong. They'd have blown them out of the stadium with that.
Mm-hmm.
The other big thing was just, you know, everybody got wrapped around the axle about Bo and Seth Williams last week, and they obviously are good, and Seth Williams, you know, dominated that game. He did. Auburn used him in ways that fans have been crying for years. There was multiple slant passes, you know.
Well, it was so obvious what they needed to do. And so just how did they wait this long to do it?
Yes.
It's like Chad and Gus sat down and said, let's open Twitter and see what the fans have been saying all this time. Oh, hey, look at that. Slants. Huh. Who'd have thunk it? Okay. But they still didn't get to the tweets about using the tight end, apparently.
Though you know what? I saw it tonight. I know it's not a ton, but Auburn tight ends have caught more passes than they did last year already.
That's crazy. Well, that's a low freaking bar, isn't it?
4 versus 3, I think. But actually, one of my favorite plays in the whole game was late in the game. We were driving, and there was like a play where Bo Nix was scrambling to the left, and Schenker was blocking, and then he released and kind of got a few yards ahead of Bo Nix, and Bo Nix kind of flicked the ball to him.
Yeah.
And we got a first down out of that. I was so happy with that play. That's the kind of thing. It's just there. Because, again, they're on third down a lot of times. Bo Nix is still doing the laser vision on Seth thing.
Mm-hmm.
The series right before the half was my least favorite series of the whole game. I think if you're Auburn's coaching staff, make a decision. Either we're trying to score or we're trying to run the clock out. Let's do one or the other and do it all the way. But let's not. We kind of tried to do both and failed at both, which really bothered me. But there was a play in there, the third damn play right before we had to punt, where Seth is on the left and Bo Nix drops back and looks at him, and like 3/4 of the Ole Miss defense is on the Seth Williams side of the field, and on the right hand side of the field, Schenker's wide open about 5 yards, and Stobe is wide open at about 10 yards, and there's one defender over there, and it's like but Bo Nix is 100% looking to the left at Seth, like he's not even thinking about over there.
Yeah. So, what did you think about the running backs? I thought Shivers was remarkably effective. Now, it was Ole Miss, but 11 carries for 60 yards, and he ran like he runs when he's at his best. You know, he puts his head down and is just like, I'm going to beat your butt, you know?
Well, and he and Tank both just explode out of the backfield.
Yes.
You know, they don't do the carry out patience reading the defense thing. They both like are shot out of a cannon when they get the ball. And I think Shivers was really effective in that game, and I think he can 100% do that against everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he can be effective in 10 carries a game. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to start every week. I mean, you can write that down right now, and if it bothers you, I'm sorry, but he's the players on offense picked him to be the captain. So he's going to start. And he's not bad. Like,
no,
he makes plays. He's not great like Tank is, but he does the job. And I'm very happy with him. And so, the third running back got banged up, so we actually kind of needed him.
Well, that's what I was going to – another two quick hits. One, DJ Williams had one carry for 8 yards. Did he get banged up?
Yeah, he got banged up early in the game and came out and didn't play again.
Okay, we just kind of basically went with two running backs then. Mm-hmm. Still no Mark Anthony Richards. At this point, you just got to redshirt him, don't you?
Well, that's the thing, man. This is the other piece that'll just kill you. Nobody's losing a year of eligibility. You don't have to worry about 4 games and redshirting. Like, everybody gets a free year this year.
Everybody gets a free year. Woo!
So it literally doesn't matter. Like, we can play all the freshmen. The problem for Auburn is we don't have any games when we're winning by 20, in the fourth quarter. We could bring in all the second, third, fourth team guys.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we need, is we need a game when we're winning by 20 in the fourth quarter. We could bring in some subs or 30, whatever. We're not going to get that. I'm going to be honest. I don't see it happening.
The other running back thing is that this is, to me, the most amazing statistic about Tank. He had 24 carries for 129 yards, but yet he didn't have a run longer than 19 yards. So he earned every one of those 129. It's not like he had an 80 and then was 23 carries for 40 yards. No, it was 24 carries for 129 yards the hard way, as they say.
No, but it's like 6, 8, 9, mm-hmm. 7, 4, 10. Mm-hmm. It's, he's just churning them out.
Yeah. That's really remarkable, though. He got 129 without ever going 20 yards or more.
Yeah.
Crazy. What did you think about Ole Miss's strategy with their quarterbacks, having the passing guy that ran some? He got 10 carries for 88 yards.
He was
the passing
dangerous.
Quarterback.
I mean, you're talking about Corral.
He got more yards. He got almost double the yards of John Rhys-Davies. John Rhys-Davies, he played Gimli. he was in Shogun. and he plays quarterback now for Ole Miss. I think that's very diverse. That's amazing that he can do that at this age. So good for John Rhys-Davies.
So, I mean, Corral's a good player. He's a really good downfield passer. But I think Ole Miss did that kind of thing when Plumlee is too useful to not play.
Mm-hmm.
I think they probably should use him at the goal line more.
Yeah, I think so.
But, you know, he's dangerous. I mean, he makes them really tough to stop. But they want that downfield passing offense, and Corral's pretty good at it. So, you know, Auburn had to constantly be looking to see who was playing quarterback and shift from one defense to the other, because it's really apples and oranges what you have to worry about.
So. Here's a couple of crazy statistics for Ole Miss's offense, this passing game that they have. They rushed for almost 300 yards on us, but they only got 161 yards passing. We outpassed them. That's crazy. It really is a reflection of our defensive strategy, isn't it?
It is 100%, but it's also a reflection of how effective our defense was. I think people, if you're unhappy with Auburn defense today, my ask is that you go back and watch all the Ole Miss games.
Yeah.
I'm just going to read you the numbers, okay?
They've been smoking people.
Yeah, Florida, 613 yards, 7.8 per play. Alabama, 647 yards, 7.5 per play. You know, Auburn, 444 yards, 5.6 per play.
Mm-hmm.
And like 60 was on that one play.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, we failed to cover the tight end or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's 60 yards of the whole thing right there. So we really did contain them.
I have questions about their receivers. One is they got a guy named Mingo. Hadn't that guy been in like all over the SEC for the last 15 years?
No, you think of the LSU defense.
Yeah, now they got another. And how is he not called Mingo the Merciless? Because that should be his name, Mingo the Merciless. And am I crazy? Did I hear them keep calling that they had a receiver named Ebola? Because I swear they kept saying the ball goes to Ebola. And I'm like, oh, God, don't anybody tackle him. Don't get near him.
Yeboa.
I'm like, man, you got a guy here named Ebola. I'm not getting anywhere near him. He can just have a touchdown every time he touches the ball. Jeez, Lord almighty, I'm not getting near him. So,
but, I mean, you talk about their receivers. Elijah Moore's a great receiver. He's torn up other teams.
Had 16
yards against Alabama. That's right, 16 yards.
16. Long of and six.
And he caught that touchdown, the short touchdown late in the game, but that was – I think it was Jalen Simpson fell down like the turf.
Yes,
tackled him.
Yes,
or he would have knocked that one down. I think
5 for 16. That means, and his long was 6. So that means he had 4 catches for 9 yards. Besides that, man, yeah, the more you kind of get inside the numbers, the more you realize just what a good job the defense did.
I mean, they were really good, and I think, but also it was this. The goal to get them to run the ball and not let them do this explosive passing thing. And, you know, it worked. It wasn't always pleasant or fun, but it worked.
I think so. All right. Well, we got to talk about the special teams play, though, because that ended up really being what almost killed us. The game wouldn't, I don't think, have been quite so nerve-wracking for those that it was nerve-wracking for if – not for some of our special teams boo-boos. And I honestly blame a lot of that on the rain. I mean, you should be able to overcome that. But if it hadn't been raining, I don't think those things would have happened. You know what I mean?
It's fair. It's just we had had bad snaps on special teams in a long time.
Yeah.
And we had 2 in one game, the extra point and the punt. And I thought the extra point thing was going to come back and bite us. I really did.
Oh, absolutely.
But the special teams went the other way, too. We had the tank kickoff return that then got called back by a ridiculous penalty.
That was so stupid.
That you could call that penalty on every single kickoff in the SEC this year.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. That was the least holding of any holding in the entire game.
That's right. Because there was some Mucho holding, you know, on the Ole Miss offense. There was a holding at the end of the game on Tut where they got a first down.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty egregious. But then they also, you know, Ole Miss ran that bad fake, and we, you know, Jordan Peters, yep, I think, stuffed it.
Yep.
So that was big.
That was big. Yeah, the punt, I could see that coming almost, that punt going over his head, because the ball was slick. They'd been having trouble holding on to it, people falling down and stuff, and then just felt like something. But the I was going to address the going for two late, because I know that there are a lot of folks out there that listen, and they ask me, so, you know, for rulings now on going for two, right? And because I've just made this whole thing about how there's when you do and when you don't. And it's usually a pretty hard and fast rule, but there are a few little exceptions. And when we went for two at the end, to me, that was right on the bubble. I could see it either way. And here's what I mean. If there had been a little more time left in the game, I would say you don't go for two there, because 34-28 is some more stuff can happen, and that one point might not matter, and you might want that extra point. That's what I'm always concerned about. When they go for two too early, they're acting like there's not going to be another score in the game, or there's only going to be one more score. And it seems like inevitably what happens is they go for two, they don't make it, and then there's more scoring, and you're like, man, if we just had that one point, you know, we'd go to overtime or something. It always comes back and bites you. But it was just late enough. It was just late enough in the game on Saturday that I'm like, you know, there may not be much more scoring, and so you might as well go ahead and round it off to 35 just to make it a little harder to go to overtime, you know, or whatever, or to win before overtime is what I'm trying to say, right? So, in other words, if you kick the extra point and you're up six, if all that's left is Ole Miss scoring, then yeah, they can win the game by kicking an extra point. So, it really depends on how much time is left. And if there's not much time left, then I would put it in the category, as I always say, of you know, unless you have to, you kind of have to at that point. So,
yes,
I was okay either way. And it worked out, right? So,
yeah.
We've had some good two-point designs lately, I thought.
I have no Pegues cat, but.
No. No, they've been doing a lot of rollout passing.
Yeah.
Like that tight rollout where the quarterback kind of goes just parallel to the line of scrimmage to his right, and then it's the same thing we did on the two-point conversion a couple of weeks ago. We just go, or I guess against Kentucky, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where you just roll to your right, go right along the line of scrimmage, and you've got several potential targets there. You know, the tight end and the receiver goes and sets down. We did that. Was it against Alabama we did that?
It was with, against Alabama.
Yeah, that worked real well. So,
in the big picture, you know, what do we take away from this? Like, how do you feel compared to how you know your perspective about the rest of the season? Does it change anything for you?
No, I mean, I think that we're kind of a mediocre team, and against Kentucky we look pretty good. Against Arkansas we look kind of mediocre and just about blew it and needed the referee to help us because we made a dumb mistake. And I think in this game we made a couple of dumb mistakes involving special teams that nearly cost it for us. And, you know, we gave up a play or two. And we're not good enough to overcome too many mistakes without getting a break like we did with the referee in those two games. You know, if we were a little bit better, those plays wouldn't matter. And if we were a little bit worse, we would be losing anyway.
But yeah, wouldn't matter on the other end.
Yeah, yeah. So we're right there in the middle where we can win if we catch a break against a team that we should be substantially better than, more or less. I guess we covered, right? We couldn't have been a 7-point favorite by kickoff in that game.
We won and covered, yes.
Yeah. So, but I mean, just because Seth Williams broke loose and went down the sideline. So, yeah. What do you think? I mean, again, I think we're just kind of mediocre, and we're right there on the bubble where we need a break or two every game, and we to overcome the bad breaks that we create ourselves.
I mean, again, I don't think Auburn's mediocre. Mediocre is pretty strong. I think we're good, but we're not a great team. The problem is, you know, we've talked about this. There's Vanderbilt at the bottom and Alabama at the top and maybe Georgia a little bit below them. But honestly, I think from like 3 to whatever, 13 in the SEC, anybody on any given week can beat anybody else.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're seeing. And I think people want to read into it. What is this team's better than that team? And I think there's a lot of who played at home and, you know,
well, the poster child's children for that is Tennessee and Kentucky.
Yes.
who knows what they're going to do from 1 week to another. 1 week, you're like, man, that Tennessee team, they could challenge in the East. And the next week, you're like, oh, they got to fire Pruitt, you know? It's crazy.
Yeah, more of the latter.
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts.
But, I mean, I stepping back and looking at the big picture, I'm going to be honest. Like, we outplayed South Carolina in that game, and they won because we made too many mistakes. It goes back to what you're saying about the mistakes. Like, mm-hmm. we're not good enough to make mm-hmm. a bunch of mistakes to beat any of these teams.
Right.
We have to play more error-free football in order to win these games. And so, but it's not like South Carolina, like, lined up and just, like, beat us. Do you know what I'm saying?
I mean, no,
gave
right.
them the ball three times on our end of the field on interceptions, and that was the difference. So yep. that and the terrible third down penalties on us. So I think in my mind, like, that's how I view that game. Mm. And so I think, and also I look ahead and go, you know, other than Alabama, there's not any team that I think is really better than us. I really don't. So,
well,
and I think the toughest teams we have to left to play, we're going to play at home.
That's true. I just look at, except for Alabama.
That's a whole different deal. Well, that's a whole other animal.
It is. It is. It's a big, stupid elephant. I look at we very well could have lost to Arkansas. We very well could have lost to Ole Miss because of mistakes. Blatant, honking, giant, glaring mistakes that were covered up. And we did lose to South Carolina. And I just think an Auburn team that loses to South Carolina and maybe the word is should have lost to Arkansas and Ole Miss, I can't call that a good Auburn team. I think mediocre is being kind at that point. We beat Kentucky fair and square. We got killed by Georgia fair and square. Every other game has been kind of a muddle.
That's fair. The thing I would say, I mean, that I really appreciate about this team is, you know, they get that that's part of the deal,
mm-hmm.
and that they're going to play really hard for 60 minutes. And at the end of the game, the defense is getting stops and the offense is moving the ball.
Yeah. Credit to them that they, other than the way they kind of acted at the South Carolina game, they have kept a pretty good attitude, you know?
Yeah. But again, I'm saying, like, even in the South Carolina game, the defense got the stop, the offense got the ball back, and we drove down and we ended the game on the 5-yard line. So it wasn't like they, you know, we didn't have a chance to win. We didn't execute on that last drive, but
that's true.
Yeah, I think in all of those games, the players made plays to get us in a position to win.
So I'm just looking for something and not seeing it. So it's not Florida, but we are having a Nightmare in Jordan-Hare Halloween special coming up Saturday afternoon, aren't we? Although it's Saturday afternoon, not Saturday night. I can't remember. I'm sure we've played 2 or 3 games on Halloween night since 1987, but that one always stands out for me, I guess because it was such a huge game, the Florida game that year, and the T-shirts with Nightmare and Jordan-Hare on them, and it was Halloween night on ESPN, and, you know, in the dark.
It was fun. It was a great game.
Oh, it was one of the greatest. It was one of the greatest ever, because that Florida team had tormented us for 3 straight years, and we got them in there, and we thought we weren't going to have our quarterback, and we thought, you know, a lot of things were going on, and man, that was something. Go listen to We Believed about the 1987. That would be there's 3 Pat Dye episodes. I think that's the middle one, 84 through 88, I believe. And you'll enjoy what we say about that game. But yeah, Nightmare in Jordan-Hare 2020 edition against LSU. There have been times this season that I've been just mouth-watering, salivating at the thought of getting LSU. And there have been times that I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to play LSU. Which LSU team do you think we're going to get?
Well, they're better now than they were a couple weeks ago. So I kind of wish we had played them a couple weeks ago, like instead of Georgia the second game.
Mm-hmm.
But LSU was very, very, very fortunate with the schedule. Because here's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
They lost that terrible Missouri game when their defense was still spiraling. Their starting quarterback got hurt, and they were going to have to travel to the swamp to play Florida with a true freshman quarterback on the road in Florida with only a week to prepare him.
Wow.
Okay? Against a Florida team with a great offense. And they got bailed out because a bunch of Florida people got sick. okay?
It serves you right, Florida.
So the LSU got very, very, very lucky, okay? Because then they got 2 weeks to prepare the true freshman quarterback, and the next game was a home game against South Carolina, which is a different kind of animal. So
it's a chicken.
A completely different world is what I'm saying. LSU should have gone to the swamp with the true freshman quarterback and got, you know, the terrible Bo Nix treatment for that kid, and he's mentally scarred for the rest of his life. Instead, they get 2 weeks to work with him. They rework on the defense a little bit. The defense is still terrible. That game was a mirage. And now they're coming to Auburn. We have faced some true freshman quarterbacks before from LSU in Auburn, and that did not go well for them. We remember the Braden Harris game.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, their defense is still bad. But their offense is still very good. It's not otherworldly like it was last year, but their offense is still very dangerous. So the dumb thing is, it's kind of similar to last week. They're actually kind of a similar team to Ole Miss, where they're a really good passing team and they have a bad defense.
I never thought I'd hear that about LSU.
I know it. It's a crazy. I think people are probably freaking out when I say that, but I'm.
Les Miles is rolling over in his grave. He's not even dead.
No, I mean, it looked like they blew South Carolina out of the stadium, and they did on the scoreboard, but there was a lot of other stuff in that game. They had a kickoff return for a touchdown, they had another long kick return, they had a pick six on South Carolina. And so, you know, South Carolina averaged like 8 yards a play. They still move up and down the field on them, but they made too many mistakes and they couldn't keep up with it. And LSU got two scores not on their offense, and that was a huge difference.
And LSU didn't play stupid like we did against South Carolina.
That's right. They did the very safe. They ran the ball a ton, and they ran the ball much better. Missouri actually completely shut down their running game, and Missouri defense is now actually looking really good because they shut down them, and then they shut down Kentucky this last weekend. And so
that's impressive.
And they ran the ball the best they have all season, and then they gave the freshman quarterback some easy throws, easy routes and stuff, off play action and stuff. He's a big kid. He kind of looks like what's his name, the quarterback that was there that won the title and.
Oh, yeah.
Jamarcus Russell.
Jamarcus with the Raiders, yeah.
He physically, he's that big a kid. So he's not a great runner, but, you know, he weighs like 250 or whatever. So when they run straight ahead with him, he could do some damage probably. But he's got a good arm. But he's still a true freshman. He's played one game at home, you know, when everything was going right for him. And I think there's a big difference between playing there in Auburn. Now, Brennan might play. He was supposedly at practice today. He's questionable. So it's going to be one of these, we see who rolls out there on Saturday kind of deals.
Right. Well, I'm glad it's in Auburn, though. I mean, it's
absolutely
funny. After the Mississippi State game against LSU, I was actually regretting that this game wasn't going to be played in Baton Rouge so that we could finally break the hex, you know? But now I'm like, hex schmecks, I just need to win. You know, I don't care about that. We'll worry about that later. We just want to win the dang ball game, and I'll take the home field advantage if that's something I can have. Absolutely, 100%. So, anything else about LSU that jumps out at you?
I mean, the receivers are still the strength of their team. Terrence Marshall is, you know, their best offensive player. They have a freshman tight end who's a huge kid named Eric Russell, but it's like A-R-I-K. Who's really good. You got to watch. He's going to be a problem, a mismatch problem for us. Defensively, you know, they've lost a ton from off the last couple of years. They still have Stingley, that freshman cornerback who's so great. You know, I don't know if they're going to stick him on Steph Williams and leave him, or if they'll just put him on one side of the, you know, the wide side of the field. But they have a freshman pass rusher named Ulari, who's really good. They have a couple of transfer linebackers who replaced a bunch of the guys who went pro after last year. They've got him Jabril Cox, who's pretty good at linebacker. So they have some talent, but again, they the level of talent from that last year to this year is a big drop off from that team. But they still, I mean, they have some receivers that can make plays. So it's going to be a lot of pressure on Auburn's secondary to tackle well. And honestly, we may do some of the same kind of stuff where we're like, okay, you know, we won't do it as blatantly as we did in the Ole Miss game or last year's LSU game, but it may be more of, okay, we'd rather you run the ball.
Isn't that crazy? I never thought I'd see the day that we would encourage LSU to run the ball. They've had some running backs run us over the years.
I know it. But the other thing is I think we can run the ball on them. I really do.
Yeah. I think a lot of this game is going to come down to the philosophy that our offensive brain trust comes up with, because the potential is there for us to control the game, I think, with our offense. But we've got to decide that that's what we want to do, and not that we're still building this perfect machine like you talked about last week that involves doing stuff that doesn't necessarily benefit us in this game. It benefits us down the road. I think that maybe Gus and company realized after last week's game that it doesn't do you a whole lot of good to create the ultimate 2021 offense if you get fired after 2020.
Mm-hmm. But also, like, you have to put players in a position to succeed. You have to do what they can do well. And I think what everybody realizes at this point is the offensive line's pretty good at run blocking. And it's going to hurt losing Brandon Council, but the other guys are there, and they're going to run the ball well. And I think we got multiple good running backs. So keep doing that. And then, you know, we still got Bo to Seth, and we got Schwartz and the other guys. And, you know, that could be a complimentary piece. Well, Tank takes over.
And then we'll see what the weather is. I mean, I really don't want another rainy day, because special teams always seems to suffer the most in the rain, and it certainly did on Saturday.
It did. And like I was just saying, they have some big-time kick returners too. So
oh, geez, great.
We're going to have to be on our game and be ready for that.
All right. Well, before we proceed further, we have to thank the folks that make this show possible. We do not do ads. We depend entirely on you, our listener, to be able to produce our shows, and I'm going to keep this quick and tight and concise so we can get back to our last couple of segments that everybody enjoys. We'll have the Power Poll results. We'll have the Eagle update and the superhero comparison. We'll have a trip around the SEC, and, of course, we'll have our listener questions. But if you want to help keep our show on the air and be part of the family, then I personally thank everybody who does that every episode. Just go to www.auwishbone.com, and for as little as a dollar a month, of course we appreciate more and that helps pay the bills, but for as little as a dollar a month, www.auwishbone.com, click on the big button to become a patron and sign up. It's quick and easy, and we super appreciate it. And to prove how much we appreciate it, here are the fine folks that keep us going and are keeping the lights on in the White Rocket Studio currently. We have Samuel Salvatore and Christopher Burleson. Then there's Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Brian Gray, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Logan Chilton, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick and Susan Trawick, Tom Anderson, Willie Carden, and Kanjan. By the way, we hear from a lot of these folks either through Twitter or through emails or through the Patreon page quite often, and always enjoy corresponding with all you folks. And I always go out of my way to make sure that we pay lots of attention to our patrons, because we appreciate you guys so much and usually have really good things to say. There's AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, James Greenwell, Joel Beckham, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, W.D. Richie. Man, people are going to be so sad if Mickey B ever stops being a patron, because I think people always enjoy getting to hear his name. This is what I'm told anyway. Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Body, Alex Nguyen, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner. We got a lot of the's middle name. Chris Hilton, Chris Thrash, Kobe Butler. And then there's Danny Flack, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Die Bama. I agree, Die Bama. Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Shannon Butson, Sarah Hines, Shane Bailey, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Todd Gray, Tony Perry, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Brandon Sisson, Brandon Smith, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, Ivor Evans, James Taylor, Jason Weasel Skull Ulrich, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Lawrence Kane, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vijakana, Nicholas Craig, Patrick Williams, Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Robert O. Sammons, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, that's the truth, Ruth, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, that's another one that can't ever quit, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Kenneth Brent Rains, Brent Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors, we thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. Thanks a bunch. And now, John, I believe you have the power poll results.
I do, Van. All right, so as usual, we're going to go from worst to best. Alone at the bottom, your Vanderbilt competition.
Woo!
Alone in second place at the bottom, Mississippi State.
Woo!
They've earned that. Not a shock to anybody. The kind of bottom tier, Missouri, Kentucky, and Ole Miss.
Wow, Missouri. I mean, Kentucky. And oh, wow, all three of them.
I don't know if I agree with this. There's a tier above that, Tennessee, South Carolina, and kind of in the middle. And then Arkansas kind of by itself.
How about that? That's incredible. Remember what we were saying about them before the season started?
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Then LSU, then Auburn in fifth.
Wow.
Texas A&M just ahead, then Florida, then Georgia, then Alabama by itself.
Yeah, I think I would probably just lump the second and third tiers from the bottom all together and just shake it up. And like you said, on any given Saturday, it could be any order.
Yes.
I don't think there should be a definite distinction between those two groups, really. Certainly not when Kentucky beat Tennessee like 37-3 or whatever it was.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like everybody, like this group of teams, Arkansas, South Carolina, Tennessee, Ole Miss, Kentucky, Missouri.
Man, yeah.
Probably throw all those in a bag.
I think so, yeah. All right. We've got an update from Jared. And let me see what I did with it. Here it is.
Look out.
As always, I'd like to just hear him for the first time on the air. He could sneak porn in there at some point, and I'd be like, oh, well, it'd be the last time we had it on there. But no, I always enjoy hearing it for the first time so that my reactions are genuine. So let's hear what's happened with the Eagle and the superhero update that Jared always comes up with. Here we go.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Ulrich, the yard sale artist, with your Auburn superhero battles. This week, it was all offense and no defense on both sides of the ball. I'm giving Auburn University the superhero identity of the X-Man, Cyclops. Those powerful optic blasts are a great offensive weapon, but he doesn't really have anything to defend himself with. He's just a normal guy. And I'm going to give Ole Miss Havoc. For those of you who are non-nerds, Havoc is Cyclops' brother, who also does some sort of force projection, but again, has no defense. And oh, by the way, when they fight each other, they cancel their powers out, so it ends up just being a bare-knuckle scrap of nothing but offensive attacks. And that's pretty much what we saw. Came down to a coin flip or maybe a little helpful whistle once again from the refs, but I will take it. With that, let's go in and check on Pat and the Eagle. As you can tell, I fixed everything since the EMP blast went off. We've got connectivity. I found out about the actual outcome of the South Carolina game. And to that I say, two shaking taxi but other than that, the Bionic Eagle, the Bionic Tiger, everything's fine. I don't think Pat has any more surprises for me unless I'm not sure what we keep in this storage closet.
Uh-oh. No, don't open it, Jared. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Okay, first of all, real proud of our team. It was a
total
team effort.
Okay, so apparently we have a bionic Coach Malzahn.
Oh, no. Why did you open that door? Why did you open that door, Jared? Oh, no. Now we've got a bionic Coach Gus running around. Oh, geez. But I did like his Cyclops and Havoc comparison, and I love that he said Havoc has kind of a form of force projection too, because with Cyclops it's like a red beam coming out of his eyes, right? And he wears the visor.
Yeah.
Havoc, it's like there's circles and then boom. I never have understood what he's doing. Have you ever? You know, you've read X-Men before. You know Havoc.
Sure.
It's like he points and there's circles. Yeah. What is he doing?
But he can't control it either. Like, no. Well, Cyclops has the glasses that help him control it, and Havok, they built him some kind of harness, whatever, to help him.
He got that funky head thing.
Yeah.
It's like head straps, and then he just circles. I don't know. Okay. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. I always appreciate Jared contributing so much. Do we have any listener questions, or should I go straight to the...
We have listener questions.
Okay. It wasn't on the agenda, so I was...
How did I do that?
I don't know,
I'm
but...
I'm so sorry.
Well, you know, the House of Commons has a few words for you.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right, and what do we got?
All right.
Don't do that.
So... First question is from Carl Von Drunker on Twitter, who says, "Will Auburn score more than 35 points at one point during the season?"
You'd think we could, but we don't play Vanderbilt, so you'd think it would have been Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where it should have been against Ole Miss that we would score more than that. But I think we could still have a game. You know what I mean? We could have a game where everything is on all cylinders and we somehow just – I think it would take – everything hitting on all cylinders and maybe a defensive touchdown or two or a punt return or a kick that's not. We would have had 42, maybe.
Yes, here you go.
If that kickoff hadn't been called back.
It's just a fair way to look at it. All right, next question is from Samuel Salvatore, who says, "Is the offensive line been overachieving since the Georgia game, yes or no?"
Ooh, that's a good question. I think overachieving compared to what a lot of people expected from them is fair.
But I'm going to say no overachieving because I still think they're not great at pass protecting. And I think if we played a team that had good pass rush, yeah, you know, like some of these defensive ends we played in the past couple of years, if we were playing them this year and trying to throw the ball, we get our lunch eaten.
Yeah.
But I think they can run block. I think it's just a different kind of group. So I'm going to say no. And then he says, "Is Tank Bigsby the second best running back in the SEC behind Najee Harris for Alabama?" Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to say definitely yes.
Yeah. Najee Harris, I mean, the thing about him is he's got the attitude of Shivers, but he's a bigger guy. He just runs hard, and he's tough to bring down. I think Tank could be that in a year or two. He's just a true freshman, you know. But if he keeps, like, putting on muscle and everything and matures a little bit and all, I think Tank has every bit of the possibility of being that kind of back.
Yeah, it's too bad that Najee Harris has half the broken tackles of Tank Bigsby.
That's awesome.
All right. Our next question is from Chris Thrash, who says, "It's something that I meant to talk about and we haven't." He says, "What are your thoughts on the two recent five-star commitments to Bruce and the basketball team?"
Holy cow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I know we got one just the other day. Who was the other one that I'm forgetting? Was it a little while back or recent?
Well, again, I think the one I'm thinking of specifically is, you know, well, I mean, Jabari Smith is the guy we're talking about.
Right.
So he is the highest, you know, rated recruit ever to Auburn in basketball.
Which is saying something considering that Bruce has brought in several. He keeps breaking his own record over and over.
Sure. Again, I mean, a couple of years ago, you know, it was Austin Wiley was the highest rated. And then Okoro.
Mustafa Heron was up there.
Pretty up there. And then it was Sharif Cooper, who's going to be the starting point guard of this coming team. And now it's Jabari Smith. And he is like the perfect Bruce Smith, Bruce Pearl player.
Mm.
He's a 6'10 guy who can run, he can finish, he can shoot from outside, he can handle the ball, he can play defense. He's going to be really, really fun to watch down the road. So I'm very, very excited about
you know,
that. He's monster.
It's amazing how much better of a coach you are when you bring in five-star players like that. I mean, Bruce did very well with nothing a few years ago. He did passably well. Look what he did with pretty darn good players year before last, and we don't know about last year. And now he's going to have, you know, good Lord.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have Cooper. We also, like, we got JT Thor in the team this coming year.
Yep.
He's the eighth highest rated player Auburn ever signed and all the rest of them. You know, we're in the last, like, 5 or 6 years.
Absolutely.
Yes, one guy. So it's crazy. what he's done to basketball recruiting, and I'm very excited.
Insane. The only down thing is some of these guys are only having 1 year, and they don't get to play together. Like, I mean, imagine if we still had a Coro and Sharif Cooper hung around for 3 years at least, and then we had the new guys. I mean, that's a national championship team right there.
It is. But again, you never know what might happen. I mean, Cooper might hang around 2 years. He might not. So we'll see. If he hangs around 2 years and he and Smith play together, you know, 2 years from now, that's a we got a ton of talent on next year's team. They're going to be very young. It's going to be different. And they're going to make a lot of mistakes, but they're going to be explosive and fun.
They're not even ranked by anybody right now.
You know what? They're picked in the middle of the pack in the SEC. I think we're going to be – there's going to be days when we just, again, we run other people out of the gym, and there's going to be days, especially early in the season, when it's not pleasant to look at. Mm-hmm. But I think by the end of the year, with the talent we have in this coaching staff, they're going to be so fun. I'm so excited about this team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see in terms of the fans in the arena and everything. That's the only kind of downside. Yes. But at least they're going to play the games this year, unlike last spring. Man, what a depressing thing that was.
It's true. All right, a few more questions. This one's from Paulo Polo, who says, there's a great Prince song called Controversy. I think that maybe it should be our theme song, since apparently we're the only team that gets dead balls called controversial. Even if his pinky did touch, there was zero evidence to overturn the call. The ball didn't change trajectory, and he threw up his hands as if he'd touched the ball to convince the ref he hadn't. Also, we deserve that call based on the terrible holding call on the tank run. What say you guys? As always, love the show.
Oh, well, thanks. And again, the whistle blew, so it doesn't matter. And again, I increasingly give Shivers credit for that. I think he might have actively caused that whistle to be blown, in which case I say...
please clap.
Exactly.
All right. In the same spirit, this is from Scott Crankton, who says, gentlemen, in light of the Arkansas and Ole Miss games, it is obvious the football gods are smiling on Auburn. Is this likely scenario for upcoming game? Can you get in this unlikely scenario for the upcoming game? Can you give the correct ruling? The opponent is lining up to kick a chip shot field goal to win the game when a wayward pigeon collides with the airborne football, causing the attempt to fail. Does the play stand, or is a re-kick granted? Thank you, as always, Scott Creighton.
It doesn't matter, because when the pigeon hit the ball, the referee blew the whistle.
Oh, for a muse of fire.
That's what happened.
I think you're right. From John Otsuki, just talking about how hard it was to rank teams this week. The hardest week he thinks ever in the power poll.
I think that's probably accurate.
David Hegler says, why can't Auburn just win without controversy? The ball hit his pinky finger, and I don't see how anyone can deny the right is right. They should have at least gotten the ball. I'm glad they didn't, but
says,
I'm very unhappy. He says, I'm tired of this, and Gus must go.
Well, I don't disagree with some of that, but again, whistle blew, doesn't matter. So, it's amazing to me how many people were tweeting after the game was over. They were tweeting that Ole Miss should have been given a touchdown, and I'm just like, and the commentators were saying that. The commentators on the game were saying that. And I'm like, has the world gone insane? Did nobody see the man blow the whistle and wave his arm and wearing a black and white striped shirt at the time? I'm like,
what the hell is the world coming to?
Exactly. That's what I was wondering.
And again, it's the same thing with the Arkansas play. Yes, it was a backwards pass. And yes, they called intentional grounding. Okay.
Yeah.
So the clock was going to stop because there was a penalty. But as soon as they blew the whistle, you can't say Arkansas would have recovered the ball. Auburn very well probably would have recovered the ball, and then we'd line up and kick the field goal anyhow after the penalty.
And so, it doesn't even matter because the whistle blew.
Yes, that's exactly right. Everything after the whistle blows is speculative fiction.
It's fan fiction. Oh my gosh. Why? I can't do it.
All right, last email is from Willie Carden, who says, hey guys, two things. One, I re-listened to last week's podcast, and I think what I was hearing was a discussion over how important defense versus a high-powered offense, which then led to a screech moment envision a needle scraping across the turntable. In 2010, 13, and 14, did Auburn not have a high-powered offense with so-so defense? Isn't that what led to a defensive focus, which then led to Muschamp and eventually Kevin Steele? Remember the 2014 Auburn-Bama game? Kind of looked like the 2020 Ole Miss Bama game.
It did.
Does Auburn need to go back to the future? Are we saying Gus was ahead of his time? And then he says, obviously the offense looked better against Ole Miss, but it seemed we just ran the ball more, including Nick's, which is, again, kind of 2013 Trey Mason and Nick Marshall-esque.
Yeah,
so
that's what I was saying.
Running the offense?
Mm-hmm.
War Eagle, Willie.
Yeah. No,
It's Chad Morris, but I get it.
Yeah. No, and I get what he's saying there. It makes my head hurt. I don't want to revisit it. It's late in the show. but I get it. I get it, Willie.
Yeah. All right. Time for Around the SEC.
That's it. Well, all right. Let's get in the car, crank it up. Let Albie take the wheel. Little van, little orange and blue van. And together we will.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
And I say you.
All right. So we had Alabama blowing doors on Tennessee, who had their doors recently screwed back on after being blown by Kentucky.
And
so, So Tennessee went from, they could be a contender, look out, to, oh, Lord. But that's Tennessee. They're so Jekyll and Hyde, right? I mean, they'll turn around and beat us 47-10. Watch.
But it's more than that. They had kind of built this narrative that they had turned the corner because they won a bunch of games at the end of last year and had this, recruiting well and stuff. And it doesn't matter. Like you're right. They are who they are.
The dirty, not so secret of Tennessee football every year is they don't play anybody the second half of the season. They always have the most front-loaded schedule of any team in college football. It's every year is how that is. So, not surprising.
And Alabama, again, huge loss. And
Let's pour out a drink here for Waddle. Yeah, feel really bad. Missouri.
And again,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, you never want to see anybody get hurt. But on the scale of terrifying opposing players, Waddle was way up there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I hope he has a miraculous and complete recovery the week after the Iron Bowl. Missouri 20, Kentucky 10. Missouri, we talked about this earlier. Missouri really just out of nowhere. I don't know what to make of it.
Again, I think they're playing really hard. They have good defense, good coaching. They found something with this quarterback. And Kentucky's offense was abysmal in this game. They played Joey Gatewood, but Kentucky could not throw the ball, and teams are basically daring them to throw the ball now. So that's pretty much it.
Well, I'm kind of glad we're not playing Missouri this year, to be honest with you.
Yeah. They've kind of turned the corner into being semi-dangerous. So.
Yeah, interesting. LSU 52, South Carolina 24. We talked about this already. LSU kind of got some extra points that they, to make it look worse than it was. I watched a lot of this game and thought South Carolina was hanging in there pretty well. They'd get behind by a touchdown. They get behind by 10 points or something, but they never looked totally out of it until late.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was like they were down by 14 in the second half and had the ball at midfield or whatever.
So yeah. I was like, they're going to go down and score, and it's going to be a one-score game, and we'll see what happens. And then it just kind of one of those where the dam breaks and everything goes the other way. So a couple of teams were off. This week? Okay. So we only had three other games. It did seem like a thin schedule when I was looking at the schedule.
Thin.
Well, coming up on Saturday, on Halloween, in addition to Auburn, LSU in Jordan-Hare, the nightmare in Jordan-Hare, we've also got Georgia at Kentucky. That could be interesting. It's at Kentucky. Mm-hmm. They're going to be stinging because that Missouri game turned out.
It's a trap.
Right? And so I think Kentucky could give them a little something for a while, but I think Georgia probably pulls away late. Do you concur?
Yeah, I don't like Kentucky's offense where they're at right now against that Georgia defense.
Oh, no, you're right. Kentucky may not score. Yeah, I have a feeling Kentucky can hang with them for a while. That game could be 10-3 at the half and 42-3 at the end, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss at Vanderbilt.
bounce back time.
Oh, there's nothing like a good dose of Commodore for what ails you, man. It'll get you back on your feet, and I think Ole Miss is going to score about 60 in that game. But we don't do lock of the week on a game that's that easy. So Mississippi State at Alabama. Okay, well, the rule is there's a rule in. I know when you had the NCAA rule book a while ago, you probably passed the page where it says Alabama always beats Mississippi State, no matter how good you know they are. And so there, and plus it's at Alabama. So there's no chance that we get another LSU game, is there, where Mississippi State lights it up? No, they're going
to. No, again, Mississippi State's offensive line is really bad, and Alabama is going to annihilate them on that side of the ball.
All right, well, hopefully Leach is working on that right now. Arkansas at Texas A&M.
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
I'm locking up the Hogs. There's my big upset. I think Arkansas has been waiting for this. I think Texas A&M is a little big for their britches. They're in the top 10, which is ridiculous to me. Who do they beat? Florida or something? Yeah, I think A&M
beat Florida at home in close game.
And I think that's like made a hallucination. It's a mirage. And I think
Florida's defense is bad.
Right, exactly. I think Arkansas is playing really well, and I'm going to go ahead and say Arkansas beats Texas A&M. What do you think?
I like it. I think it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, that's the one I'm probably looking
for. This would be a good preview for us to keep our eye on how Texas A&M is.
Yeah. Do we know what time of the day that game's going to be played? We're the 2:30 game.
We're the CBS game. That's one of the evening games on the SEC Network.
Good. So it's not the Jefferson Pilot.
No.
I bet that's Georgia-Kentucky.
Georgia-Kentucky.
Oh, man. If Kentucky hadn't been crash diving lately, that would have been the – and if Georgia hadn't lost to Alabama, that would have been a big game, but they messed up. And then Missouri at Florida, which honestly, I know we talked about this before the show. If you ask me to bet $5, have Missouri and Florida already played this year, I'd have said absolutely. It just seems like they've already played this game.
It does. But they have not.
They have not. Well, they'll play it. And does Missouri have a chance here?
You have, again, Florida coming off a week where they didn't play.
Yeah. But Missouri's confidence has got to be pretty high right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think Missouri's got to feel pretty good about themselves. But it's at Florida. So
oh, well.
I think the games they've won recently have been at home. The LSU and Kentucky games are both at home. So
yeah,
we'll see. First big road start for this new quarterback for them. But I think it's going to be a game. I don't think it's going to be a Florida blow them out of the stadium situation.
Do we know what time of day that one is?
That's the other evening game, an SEC alternate while the main game is Arkansas A&M.
Really interesting. So we're going to be flipping back and forth. Man, that's always annoying. They needed to put that one. Well, there's only three time slots, really, honestly. You can fudge it around, but there's the morning game, the middle afternoon game, and the night game. And it's, we don't play a Pac-12 type game. We don't play before 11, thank God. So you kind of, that's. Now, you know what? That Missouri-Florida would make such a great Thursday night game, wouldn't it?
I agree. And you know what? The Pac-12 is going to do a thing where they play some 9 a.m. games. So it'll be noon.
9 a.m. for them.
Yeah. 9 a.m. local time.
Man.
Noon Eastern. Can you imagine that?
So the Pac-12 is voluntarily creating their own.
The 11 a.m. Jefferson Pilot time slot of death.
They voluntarily did that when they didn't have to. That's crazy.
And they put a bunch of their good games on Friday night too this year. So
that's cool. I like that. I like that a lot. Because I dig the Pac-12. I think that probably the Pac-12 is the conference I enjoy watching the most after the SEC, just because it's like you never really know what's going to happen. They're all different every year. It's not like the SEC where the same teams are good every year and the same teams suck every year. And the Big Ten where there's two teams that are decent or three and then everybody else is crap and, or the Big 12 where everybody's crap or the ACC where everybody's crap except Clemson. But in the Pac-12, there's genuine mystery, it seems like. And I enjoy that. And they do some interesting things on offense and defense. Like, they only actually play defense. And so there's just, yeah, it's... Yeah, it's fun. So I'm looking forward to that. But I do think that Missouri Florida would have been such a good Thursday night game. Oh man,
I'm in for that.
Would have been good. That would have been good. Maybe I should record it, avoid all spoilers, and just watch it next Thursday.
I like it.
We have the technology, man. We could do it.
The only problem would be when I talk about it next Monday.
On a Monday, like John, shut up.
We'd see that one.
Oh, yeah. But they haven't played that yet. How could you know?
I'm seeing the future.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I think we've gone on long enough. I think we covered things pretty well. So I appreciate all the, as always, the folks that send in questions. Be sure if you in the future want to get in a question for our show to either email it to John or tweet it at AU Wishbone or at John. He kind of corrals all the questions up. I got other things I'm engineering and producing here, and he handles the poll and that kind of stuff. And we have a nice division of labor, so just send that stuff to John and we'll get it on the air. And again, www.auwishbone.com, not only to join the Patreon, but also if you want to check out We Believed and see our history, listen to our history podcast episodes. There's 8 of them that cover from Doug Barfield's end of his tenure, or the beginning, all the way up through right now, Chizik, I think, up through 2012. So check it out. All right, I think our time is up. Any last thoughts?
We did get another email from Ben Spooner with some tank potential sound effects. We're evaluating those. We need to pick a tank sound effect because he's going to be in our lives for a long time. He deserves something. So
yeah, we've got to. We do have to, because I did like... I think this is the one that Jared sent that I'm...
Who is this guy? I don't know, but he's in a tank.
I did like that one a lot. We'll see. I got to put all those on the soundboard. I've been really busy with work this week and haven't got them all installed yet, but I do like those. So we'll check out what Ben sent. We appreciate that. All right, John. Well, I guess our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.